Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And thanks for tuning in. New record. New cumulative listener record last week, like 2.4 million. Wow. Thank you. So, listen, I got like zillions of things to cover with you this morning. It's early morning in Grand Junction, Colorado, signing books here at the Barnes & Noble. Great bunch of folks. Great town. Great readers. Love the western slope of Colorado. And I will be here today, Saturday, and Sunday, and Monday. 3 days. Quite an honor. Thank you, Barnes & Noble, Grand Junction. So come down and visit. And yesterday I was at Loveland, which was a rockin' foot stomping book buying event, which is great. So thanks to Loveland, another terrific Barnes & Noble crew, and the many, many, many thousands of readers I have down in that area. Now, I'll tell you, this is what we're going to cover because, you know, there is so much news and it's breaking so fast. This whole FBI corruption, you know, I told you, more than a year ago, that the top, at the top, not underneath the top, but at the top, the FBI was rotten, and the Obama holdovers in the Justice Department were rotten, and that this, this sanctimonious, arrogant corruption, disregard of the rule of law, I mean, I'm almost at a loss for words because it's really worse than I thought. And trust me, I thought it was pretty bad. So we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning and from some angles that you haven't thought about relative to Comey and Strzok, the wayward, treasonous FBI fourth in command, head of counterintelligence until he was recently demoted, and his lover baby, Linda Page, another attorney working on the Mueller investigation. I mean, we're going to talk about that. The press, well, not all the press, the mainstream media is trying to ignore it, but a lot of the press has been talking about this. I'm not going to dredge up all those details for you. You've heard them. But I am going to tie it in a bow tie for you. And I'm going to give you something to think about behind the bow tie. In other words, the package underneath the ribbon. Because there's more going on here than meets the eye. And let me tell you, there's a lot more at stake than meets the eye. We're going to talk about also the Roy Moore debacle down in Alabama, and I'm going to bring you some stuff that you, I guarantee you haven't heard. Absolutely haven't heard. Did you know that Roy Moore has pulled to within a few thousand votes of Doug Jones because there was rampant voter fraud, maybe up to 60,000 votes that are being disqualified? There's like thousands of prosecutions pending. Wait to hear these stories. Your eyes will bug out. And an important lesson for upcoming elections, and by the way, a clear indicator of how much voter fraud there was in the 2016 presidential election. I have always told you that there were at least 5 million illegal votes cast for Hillary Clinton, maybe more, including dead people, people voting twice, people voting across state lines, people voting multiple times, dogs voting. I'm serious. Dogs voting. illegal aliens voting, felons voting. Well, this Alabama election seems to be a microcosm of what happened and what has been happening nationally for the last, well, since Obama started to run. You know, one of the things I'm going to bring home to you tonight is that all this stuff starts at the top. And you know who the top was? Barack Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Loretta Lynch, and Eric Holder. That is where this corruption and rot within the top echelons of various agencies and departments of our government began. It began with them. They are treacherous, treasonous felons. But I'll tell you more about that as we get into the show. I'll tie it all in for you. And you know, the funny thing is that you'll find that everything I'm talking about this morning is related. Even though they will seem, when I begin the segment, that they are not touching whatsoever. But you'll see. I think you'll be fascinated. I really do. I have a story that I'm going to tell you also in one segment about a pediatrician, a specialist, 20 years of experience, and what his office believes is going on with this whole progressive allow little girls to be boys and little boys to be girls, and you know, it's okay to not identify as your sex and all this kind of stuff. I think any of you who have a family, any of you who have children, particularly young children, and particularly you moms out there, you'll be fascinated by this segment. And by the way, that's going to tie right into the salacious sex fuzz, which not only is continuing, it's ramping up. It's multiplying. It's like exponential. And you know what? It's on purpose. I'm going to explain that to you today, this morning also. So, and then I have finally, you know, the tax deal looks like it's coming down. I mean, there's always last minute wrinkles, et cetera, et cetera. But what this tax deal, assuming it's passed, what this tax deal will not do is affect certain changes to the tax law, which take effect for tax year 2017. In other words, changes to the tax law you may not know about, but which really kind of affect your everyday life, which are going to take effect in 2017 and affect the tax filings you will make by April 15th of this coming year. Unless, of course, you are on extension. But whether you're on extension or not, the piper must be paid. The grim reaper shall come. All right. So anyway, we have a lot. We have like loads and loads and loads to cover. So I'm going to start with a story, actually a double story, because they're both short. So I'm signing books at Aurora South, Barnes & Noble. By the way, another great crew and thousands of readers, many thousands of readers out of that store. And thanks to everybody down there for all their hospitality. It was great. As was Pueblo, Colorado. Thanks to Pueblo and Albuquerque was terrific. I mean, all the book signs have been absolutely phenomenal this December. And the stores have been great, and the staffs have been great, and the readers have been great, and it's been a lot of fun. And for the last, well, up to yesterday when I was signing in Loveland, I had kind of 3 days off, which I normally don't do in the middle of December. But I had a million things to take care of at the ranch, went back up there. It was kind of good. Bunch of stuff going on. And anyway, I'm in Aurora South. And I believe this was last Sunday. And this gal comes by, and I asked her if she was a reader of historical fiction. And she said, yes, but I'm not reading any history right now. And I looked at her and went, really? She goes, yes. Well, you know, that Trump, he's tearing apart our history. He is ruining this country. And she just went off. And I said, well, can you give me an example? I mean, I kind of kept my... First of all, I was shocked, which I'm not often shocked. And secondly, I was curious. The more she talked, the curiouser and the curiouser I became. So I said, well, can you give me an example? She goes, well, just look what he did down there in Utah. He's ruining the state, and he's going to allow drilling, and he's this and that, and he's taking land away from the people. And I went, well, you know, it just so happens I kind of know a lot about this, and I know a lot about land. I know about the national monuments and the huge millions of acres land grab that Barack Obama made as he was leaving office down there in Two Bears and several other areas in Utah. I said, you know, the bottom line is the federal government is not a separate entity. The land down there is private. And we are the government. And the government can't take, you know, I didn't say you're confused, but I was thinking it. I said, but the bottom line is that the land should never have been taken by the federal government. And the land was rightfully returned to its former status, or a portion of it. A portion remained a national monument. Well, she kind of huffed and stomped off, and that was that. But I found it really interesting. I mean, and I don't know if she was a progressive or a liberal. I bet progressive, which is, you know, far alt-left, rather than well-meaning American who thinks left, i.e. liberal. And she stomped off. But I found it fascinating, her vehemence about a subject she knew nothing about. I mean, this woman knew nothing about land, national monuments, private property rights, government of the people, by the people, for it. I mean, she knew nothing. It was scary. Now, let me tell you the second story. So the second story is I have a gentleman come up to me in Loveland. And it was exactly the opposite of this gal in Aurora South. And he came up to me and he goes, so what do you think of Trump? I said, well, I think he's great. You know, I wish he'd think a little bit. I love his tweets, but I wish he'd think a little bit before he tweets some of the things he does or tweets them in the way he does. And I would like to see what he is doing behind the scenes relative to this mushroom of corruption which is being exposed. But, you know, I think the guy is exactly who we hired. We hired somebody to dismantle the bricks and to drain the swamp. And the guy had a big smile and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it was very interesting in the space of 2 days, because that he was the day after this gal at Aurora South. It was very interesting to talk to two people. I mean, most people, we don't talk politics. There might be a joke or something. You can't even really tell where people are standing. And to be honest with you, people can stand wherever they want. Just like I can stand wherever I want, and you folks who are listening to me, including you lefties who listen to me, can stand wherever you want. But I found it really interesting how diametrically opposed the attitudes, the knowledge, the outlook, and the preferences of this gal in Aurora South and this guy in Loveland. So, very interesting, and it pointed out the divide in the country that everybody is talking about. So, that is the end of the story for this morning. Now, let's get into the meat and potatoes, because, wow, what we have is a smorgasbord. We have like a buffet of stuff to cover. So, first of all, let's start with Roy Moore, shall we? Now, listen, I'm not often wrong, although I wish I was wrong on many things way more often than I am. But I'm not often wrong, but I was wrong about the Roy Moore election because I really did think he would win. Now, let me tell you that although the fat lady is humming, she ain't singing yet. Roy Moore is not conceited. And despite the best efforts of the Republican establishment, and despite him being admittedly a horrible candidate, I mean, I've listened to him a few times, folks. I'm not impressed. If you listen to my shows over the last 4 or 5 weeks, I was saying we need to get him elected, let him vote, investigate him in the meantime. If he did this stuff, can him, and let the Republican governor of Alabama appoint his interim replacement, which will be a Republican. And I bemoaned the fact that the establishment, the rhinos, the Republican establishment, had created a situation where the Alabama seat was in jeopardy. We'll talk a little bit more about that this morning, but not much. The interesting thing about Roy Moore, despite the fact that he's less than coherent, has a somewhat dubiously controversial past, was unable, it appears, to talk about issues, and generally was somebody, you know, I didn't really like. The interesting thing about the Roy Moore election was, even the night the polls closed, and they called Doug Jones the winner, the margin separating the two candidates out of 1.3 or 1.4 million, whatever votes cast, was only about 1.5%. Now, to put this in context for you, 1.5% is about 20,000 votes. You know, that is not a lot of votes out of 1.3 million people. 20,000. And it seems, although now it's starting to vary because of some of the things I'm about to bring up for you, there were 22,000 write-in votes. In other words, the write-in votes literally were the margin, and we assume that most write-in votes were by Republicans who just couldn't vote for Doug Jones. They wanted to exercise their right to vote, and they couldn't vote for Roy Moore. So those 22,000 write-in votes, which, by the way, I think was prompted by Shelby, the other senator from Alabama, and a Republican, kind of, being interviewed on all the national networks saying, well, I can't vote for Roy Moore, and I can't vote for Doug Jones, so I'm going to write in, a particular candidate. You know, write-ins are just fine. And I think Shelby almost single-handedly blew that or created that 1.5% gap. And I think he intended to. And I think the establishment put him up to it, including Mitch McConnell and the rest of the yahoos up there. Now, listen, we can argue till the dogs come home about whether Roy Moore is innocent or guilty, whether Roy Moore is a moron or a saint, and whether Roy Moore would have been a political albatross or not to the Republican Party in 2018. But the one thing we can't argue about is that he would have voted for Trump's agenda. And the other thing we can't argue about is that Doug Jones will not. Doug Jones is an alt-left progressive who, against any other candidate, including Mel Brooks, the congressman, who was running for Senate in the primary, and who is terrific. I mean, he's a Trey Gowdy, Jim Jordan type of conservative. Smart, talks well, understands conservative positions, is devoted in his conservatism. And, of course, he got knocked out by Mitch McConnell, which opened the door for Judge Roy Moore, which opened the door for Doug Jones. So, nice job, Mitch. Great job. You know, there are times when I'm not sure the rhinos up there in Washington even want to be in the majority. In fact, there are times when I'm not even sure they want to see any of Trump's policies, despite the fact many of these policies are conservative, like tax, like Obamacare, etc., succeed. But that is a whole different show. And one day I'll do it. So we find out in the last 72 hours, in fact, this started to break the day after the election. That was Wednesday. It picked up steam on Thursday. And if you go to the voter fraud section on the website, on therightsideradio.com, you'll see amongst the many articles posted in all the different categories, you will see a bunch of articles posted under voter fraud. Not only is Doug Jones's lead shrinking rapidly, but it appears that up to 60,000 votes may be thrown out by the Board of Elections and the Secretary of State in Alabama because what has been uncovered is a rampant, pervasive, insidious, pre-planned, massive voter fraud. Let me give you some examples. This is, by the way, this is, once again, this is just coming out over the last 72 hours. No media is covering this. Not conservative media, not mainstream media, nobody. But I want to bring it to you. And some of this still needs to be verified. So I'm going to give you the sources I'm using, and we'll see how these play out. So Ladies of Liberty, which is usually a pretty stalwart kind of small-time conservative news outlet, they use as an example a town by the name of Bordalama, Alabama. Now, the vote totals in Bordalama, Alabama were 953 for Roy Moore and 5,327 for Doug Jones, the Democrat. Here's the problem. There's only 1,867 registered voters in Bordalama. Imagine that. Quote, state election officials have determined that more than 12,000 votes, that's 5,329 more than yesterday, Wednesday, so far in the state of Alabama are null and void because the voters don't appear to be living. That was reported by local Alabama news station WYKY, which, by the way, is a big station down there in Birmingham. Quote, it appears that these voters' names were never removed from the rolls when they passed away, and someone used their information to stack votes for Doug Jones, unquote. Apparently, folks, it's so rampant, and the news is really big down in Alabama, even though the mainstream the national press isn't covering it, because, you know, that hurts the whole image of the Democratic resurgence and the sweep of 2018 that's coming up and all this other nonsense. 150,000 Alabamans have signed a petition so far on change.org. I went there and checked it. You can check it for yourself. Asking the State Board of Election Integrity to investigate all these instances of voter fraud. I'm not done with the examples, by the way. On Reddit, there was a thread. You can look it up for yourself, by the way, unless they've removed it by now. Reddit, by the way, is a left, you know, no, it's more than left-leaning. It's a left online deal. Quote, African Americans in Mississippi need to make a short trip to Alabama and vote for Doug Jones, unquote. That was their post in the few days leading up to and the day of the election. Quote, we'll start in Selma, then move to Birmingham and blanket the state from there. Well, some of the folks that were inspired by those posts and others like them on left and alt-left media, they did exactly what the posts requested. Here is a... this is from the Bloomfield Sheriff's Department. and was reported in the Bloomfield Press. Quote, authorities apprehended 27 African-American men and women loaded onto a bus at their very first stop at Warsaw Middle School in Selma. Every single one of them will be charged with a crime for attempting to interfere with the election. And the story goes on to talk about how this group, this is just one group, that was motivated to cross state lines and vote illegally in the Alabama election, that they had an itinerary, a written itinerary plotted that had them stopping and voting numerous times. Remember, they don't have the right to vote in Alabama to begin with. Voting numerous times in, quote, majority white areas in an attempt to swing the vote for Roy Moore, or from Roy Moore, who they called a racist child molester, unquote. The situation is so bad down there in Alabama, folks. I'm going to give you a few more examples here, just from different sources. I mean, this is not from a single source now. This is from many different sources, including kind of mainstream metropolitan radio stations in Alabama. But the Federal Elections Commission has now sent investigators down there, which I can't tell you how unusual that is. It is highly unusual, which tells me, which lends credence to all these reports. And I can't vouch for the numbers, like the numbers I just quoted you in those two news reports from three different sources. But something big's going on for the FEC to be going down to Alabama. Something big. And the FEC is reporting that based on its preliminary investigations, it may have to recommend invalidating more than 60,000 votes, 60,000 votes from the Birmingham area. So, and that's because those 60,000 votes, and this is based on police logs, poll watchers, Heritage Foundation watchdogs, many, many, many people were caught voting multiple times. Many, many, many people were caught voting with fake IDs. Gee, I thought the Democrats said you ought not to have an ID. Huh. Because folks just can't get an ID. It's too hard to get an ID and we can't vote. It's suppressing the vote. Gee, I guess it's pretty easy to get a fake ID. Huh. And fake voter registrations, i.e., you know, voting for the dead. There's an example, and it was reported in the Birmingham Press. One poll watcher, I'm quoting, one poll watcher witnessed the same two men, who were obviously twins, return to the polls wearing different hats to vote at least four times. When confronted, the two men pushed their way through the crowd and ran. One poll worker in Birmingham's 412th district said, quote, we were a little bit suspicious of some of the people coming in, but they had what looked like valid IDs. We checked their pictures and signatures, and they seemed to match, but let's be honest, it could be hard to tell them apart. So, you know, this is a really, really, really big story. And it's not a big story. Once again, look behind the story. This is a big story, folks, not because of 60,000 fraudulent votes in Alabama, not even because in the end the election could swing to Roy Moore, or at least close enough to force a recount, which would delay the seating of Doug Jones, which would allow the Republicans in Congress to get more of their agenda done, if they can manage to get their caca together. It's a big story because it tells you what the left is willing to do to win elections. On one hand, they pound their chests and talk about democracy and equality and the Constitution and all the other nonsense that they spew to cover up their real ends. And then they bus thousands of people in from neighboring states to vote illegally. They, and I didn't even get into this part of the story, they illegally register thousands of felons, also, by the way, has been confirmed in Alabama by numerous news sources, and by the folks who registered the felons themselves, all funded, by the way, by George Soros, his Open Society, and several other outfits. This is a big story because, number one, it lends credence to what some commentators, like myself, and to what President Trump has said, which is there were millions, millions of illegal votes cast in the 2016 election. Millions, folks. Alabama is a microcosm. It is a snapshot of what went on in 2016. And if you think it was bad in Alabama with 60 or 70 or whatever it's going to turn out to be fraudulent votes, think about California, which has roughly 10 times the population of Alabama. I mean, it really makes you stop and think. And the other reason it's important, folks, because it tells you what the left will do in future elections. And it lays bare all their protestations over valid voter ID laws and all the other stuff that they scream and wail about. They will take back power at the expense of your constitutional right to vote. Just like the alt-left and progressives at the top of government, whether it's the FBI or the CIA or Obama's administration, will sacrifice people's lives and reputations and positions and financial security and freedoms to achieve their ends. There is nothing that the alt-left will not do to gain and maintain control and power. Now, you know what's really interesting about all this? What's really interesting about all this is that a lot of the Doug Jones vote, forget what part of it was illegal, what part of it's going to be thrown out, but a lot of the Doug Jones vote was the black vote. And I have to ask you black folks out there, I know that I have a number of black listeners because I get emails from you. I have to ask you, why would your brothers and sisters vote to continue or vote to maintain or vote to reinstall the power of your financial and social plantation owners, i.e., the so-called Democratic, make me gag, Democratic Party, which is no longer. It is now the Progressive Party. I would like you folks to think about, and listen, there's nothing I can do about it. But there's maybe some things you can do about it. You can talk to your friends and your neighbors. You can hopefully make people see the light. What the hell has the Democratic Party done for you lately? In fact, what has the Democratic Party done for you in the last 10 years, including with a black president? In fact, what has the Democratic Party done for you since 1965? Other than create a situation where there's mass murders in Chicago and other metropolitan areas, to allow open borders which have stripped you of your jobs and your wages, and to foist a situation on you where you become, and I can't use any other word, where you become a slave to their system. I mean, if they can keep people unemployed, and they can keep them hungry, And they can keep them dependent on welfare and food stamps and all the other giveaways. Then they can keep their vote. So, all you black folks out there, I'm sure you know other black folks who are in Black Lives Matter and who are, you know, rabid Democrats and who are rabid anti-Republicans and who are whatever. I really want you to ask your friends, what have the Democrats done for you since 1965? Name one damn thing they have done for you, except keep you down. You know, it is no coincidence that since Trump was elected, black homeownership is at the highest levels in history. It is no coincidence that since Trump was elected president, and remember, Obama didn't do squat for 8 years. In fact, the unemployment rate of the black community overall, and black youth in particular, more than doubled. It was even worse than that in some areas. And under Trump, it has been cut in half. The black community did not see wage increases. In fact, they saw wage decreases because of the open borders policy of the Democrats for the last 20 years, except for this year, which just happens to be the first year Donald Trump was in power. And while the wage increase has been modest, I mean very modest, it's still an increase. Yet, black folks turn out in droves to vote for Democrats like Doug Jones. I can't get my hands around it. You know, I have the same questions about many of the Jewish community, which I think, by the way, has considerably shifted in terms of for or against Trump or populism or conservative principles, etc., for a number of reasons. But nonetheless, there are many Jewish folks out there who vote Democratic. They vote for the party that wanted to return Israel, a la Barack Obama, to its pre-67 borders, which is suicide. They vote for the party that funds the Palestinian organizations, all of which funding, most of which funding, goes to their terror arms, Hamas and Hezbollah, with tens of millions of taxpayer dollars every year. They give $150 billion to Iran and allow it to continue building nuclear weapons when its two primary stated goals, often, always, all the time, you know, I mean, they've said it enough that I think you can probably believe it, was number one, destroy Israel, number two, destroy the United States. I mean, how do you do that? How do you vote for the Democratic Party? I don't get it. I don't get it. And if you do, how do you allow yourself to be hoodwinked? How do you get yourself in such a rabid, fomented position that you will commit crimes, i.e. voter fraud, to ensure that either you're anti-Israeli, pro-globalist, all-inclusive, coddle radical Islam Democrat, if you happen to be Jewish, or you're make sure you don't have a job, make sure you stay on welfare, make sure you stay on food stamps, Democrat, if you're black. How do you do that? I'm sorry, I don't get it. Maybe some of you can write me and tell me, because I'd really like to understand it. I really would. anyway, folks, the message in this election is that the rhinos in Washington need to keep their nose out of local politics. That's lesson one. Lesson two, you need to have good candidates. Now, Alabama had a great candidate, Mel Brooks. The rhinos in Washington took him out. And we were left with Roy Moore, who was, no way, there's no way to slice or butter this bread, a lousy candidate on a zillion different levels. And the third big lesson is that the Democrats are going to be using, number one, this whole sagacious sex fuzz, and we're going to get into this a little bit later in the show, this whole sagacious sex fuzz nonsense in a lot of cases, and they're going to be using voter fraud. I mean, rampant, blatant, in-your-face voter fraud. Dead people voting, dogs voting, people voting across state lines, people voting multiple times, people voting with fake IDs. This is going to be the MO for all elections going forward, which makes voter ID laws and what Trump's election commission is doing, which is trying to purge all the rolls of dead people, et cetera, throughout the United States, critical. And I mean critical prior to the 2018 elections, particularly critical prior to the 2020 elections, and critical from there on, because you know what? One American, one vote. And I want you to understand that every vote that's taken illegally is a vote that cancels yours. It is a direct and personal affront and slap in the face to you, your values, your feelings about this country as a representative republic, and the Constitution. Those are the lessons. Those are the lessons to take away from this. All right. I'm going to take a... one of the things I wanted to bring up to you this morning was, you know, the mainstream media has just gone berserko. We know that, but I mean, the rate at which they are making up and pumping out fake news is truly breathtaking. Last week, I think I gave you five examples in 1 week of major, this is not minor, major intentional errors in reporting. And there was another five or ten this week. I'm just going to give you two. ABC reported that there was no crowd for Trump at his Florida rally. That there were many, many, many empty seats and yada, yada, yada. Folks, Google it up and take a look for yourselves. The place was packed. Outside the arena, it was packed. It was unbelievable. There was like standing room only. You know, it's almost as nonsensical as Trump, as Trump saying that he had the biggest inaugural crowd in history. It's real easy. You know, you look at the picture and you can tell it was a huge crowd, but it wasn't the biggest in history. And the second example I'm going to give you of the nonsense which has happened with the mainstream media this week is that they tried to drive a wedge between one of Trump's personal attorneys, Jay Sekulow. He's also one of the top cheeses at Judicial Watch, and the special counsel, Mueller, by saying that Jay Sekulow had criticized Mueller and said he had to go or something. I mean, it doesn't really matter. They tried to drive a wedge, and Jay Sekulow either had a transcript or a recording or something of the conversation Of the interview, which they improperly quoted. It was an interview. He said no such thing. In fact, he praised Mueller and said that he thinks that Mueller will be wrapping up soon. I mean, just literally, like, you listen to the news story, which was carried, I think, by NBC and Reuters and several others, and you watch the tape of Sekulow's interview, where he doesn't say anything even remotely close to what is attributed to him, and you scratch your head and go, wow, how can this occur? How can this occur? And before we get into the Department of Justice rotten corruption, the FBI rotten corruption, all of which stems from, and this is really important, and nobody's talking about it out there, from the rotten, corrupt, anti-constitution, anti-American Barack Obama administration, and his top crooks that he appointed, Eric Holder, Loretta Lynch, his Iranian handler, Valerie Jarrett, and others. The stench all starts there, folks, and nobody's talking about it. You know, one of the things I want to see in this ugly, smelly morass of a swamp, which is beginning to be revealed now, with Comey and this agent Strzok and his girlfriend Lisa Gray and, Weinstein, second command of the Mueller investigation, you know, praising Sally Yates, the Obama appointee who was an acting attorney general who refused to implement the travel ban. I mean, we're going to get into it in more detail. But here's what I really want to see. I want to see not only those people held to account, but I want to know every single communication, every single relay of information, and every single command or order, direct or indirect, that these traitors, and I'm using that word straight out. I mean, I don't hear anybody else in the press calling them traitors. These people are traitors. They are worse than criminals. They are stealing your rights from you. Understand this. Every right of every person that is diminished diminishes your rights. Every time the rule of law is ignored, you are less safe. Every time there is an equal application of justice, you are the person put at risk. You are the person losing rights. You are the person who is being failed by a system that you have trusted. And the people who do that, contrary to law, contrary to the Constitution, contrary to our beliefs, contrary to their fiduciary duty, as our employees paid with our tax dollars, to safeguard our rule of law and Constitution, those people are far worse than just criminals, folks. Far worse. And the people who coddle them and order them and cajole them and nudge them to undertake these actions are the worst of the worst. I can't tell you what contempt and disdain I hold these people in. And I'm being kind with my choice of words. Kind. But before we get into that smelly, yicky, swampy, bubbling, in fact, boiling mess right now. I want to tell you a little something. We're gonna diverge a little bit. I want to tell you about these pediatricians who are longtime pediatricians and child psychologists who are now coming out against this whole culture in progressive America that says, you know, if a little boy thinks he's a girl, we should support him in that. And if a little girl thinks she's a boy, we should support him in that. I'm going to give you a different take from the professionals. Number one, these folks, and this article, by the way, is Michelle Critella in the Daily Signal, if you'd like to read it yourself. And I may even have it posted under women on the website. According to Critella, there are 6,500 genetic differences between men and women. And they can't be changed by hormones, and they can't be changed by surgery. As she says, human sexuality is binary. You either have a Y chromosome and develop into a male, or you don't, and you will develop into a female. She goes on. An identity is not biological, it is psychological. It has to do with thinking and feeling. Thoughts and feelings are not biologically hardwired. Our thinking and feeling may be factually right or factually wrong. And she has a great example here. Several great examples, in fact, I'm going to give you. If I walk into my doctor's office today and say, "Hi, I'm Margaret Thatcher," my physician will say I'm delusional and give me an antipsychotic. Yet, instead, if I walked in and said, "I am a man," remember this is a woman writing this particular article, and said, "I am a man," he would say, "Congratulations, you're transgender." I mean, yeah, isn't that true? She gives another example. If I were to say, "Doc, I am suicidal because I'm an amputee trapped in a normal body. Please cut off my leg. I will be diagnosed with body identity integrity disorder." But if I walk into that same doctor's office and say, "I am a man, sign me up for a double mastectomy," my physician will. See, if you want to cut off a leg or an arm, you're mentally ill. But if you want to cut off healthy breasts or a penis, you're transgender. I mean, this article really makes you think. And she talks about, in the article, she talks about how this is affecting children. And I mean affecting them for the long term. So she talks about one patient she had, and she calls him Andy. I don't know if that's his real name or not. And between the ages of 3 and 5, he seemed to be obsessed with girls, girly stuff, girl toys, and he kept saying he was a girl. And it sounds like she properly diagnosed that it was a mental illness of a parent that is a big factor in how children perceive themselves in terms of gender. She gives an example. In the middle of one session, Andy put down the toy truck, held onto a Barbie, and said, "Mommy and Daddy, you don't love me when I'm a boy." I found out that when Andy was 3, his sister with special needs was born and required significantly more of his parents' attention. Andy misperceived this as Mommy and Daddy love girls. If I want them to love me, I have to be a girl. Pretty interesting, don't you think? I thought this article was really fascinating and very timely. Anyway, the end result is Andy and the family got therapy, and Andy realized he was a man and grew up to be a man. She talks about the fact that this has gotten so crazy in terms of kids. This coddling of this transgender notion. Gee, where did that come from? Oh, that's right. Barack Obama. That's right. Barack Obama and his transgender bathrooms and all the rest of his crap. Anyway, she talks about the fact that it's gotten so crazy that little boys who think they're girls, many doctors now are putting them as they approach puberty on puberty blockers so that they can continue to impersonate girls. And then she talks about the fact puberty blockers have never been tested. They don't know what they really do in biologically normal kids or what the long-term, perhaps materially adverse effects might be. She mentions the fact that when these same blockers are used to treat prostate cancer in men and gynecological problems in women, they cause severe memory problems. Like I said, this was such a fascinating viewpoint, such a fascinating article, and so timely. In the article, she talks about the fact that a girl who insists that she's a boy, if she's been on testosterone daily for 1 year, she is cleared under all medical practitioners in the United States of America now, thanks to Barack Obama and his whole stuff. She's cleared to get a bilateral mastectomy at the age of 16. And then she uses another kind of weird paradox, which her article's full of. I mean, it really makes you think. Quote, mind you, the American Academy of Pediatrics recently came out with a report that urges pediatricians to caution teenagers about getting tattoos because they are essentially permanent and can cause scarring. But this same AAP, that is American Academy of Pediatrics, is completely in support of 16-year-old girls getting a double mastectomy, even without parental consent, so long as the girl insists she is a man and has been taking testosterone daily for 1 year. I mean, wow. Think about that. Whew. Anyway, she goes on to talk about in the article about how to properly bring children who have been influenced, not biologically, but psychologically, in their leanings toward one gender or the other, particularly a gender which is not their biological gender, how to bring them through that developmental stage so that they can assume their proper role under proper gender as their biology dictates. Pretty fascinating. Now, why do I insert that in the show today, you ask, with all this other stuff bubbling around? I insert it, folks, because, number one, we needed a little breather from all this crap that's going on, that's swirling around us, the apparent disintegration of our trust in agencies that we once held in veneration. But I also bring it up because it's about sex. And everything that's going on right now in politics is, if you boil it down, about sex. You should vote for women if you're a woman. You shouldn't vote for a man if you're a woman. Men accused, you know, of things 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, you know, shouldn't be allowed to walk the planet Earth or breathe the air, whatever. And you know who's behind all this, folks? The alt-left and George Soros. And I'm going to go over this with you here in a minute, because he's funding all this stuff. He's like funding the organizations behind the Me Too movement. Basically, let me boil it down to you. So we know that the alt-left long ago weaponized age differences, the young versus the old. And they weaponize race differences, black versus white, black versus Hispanic, Oriental versus, I mean, whatever it happens to be. And they weaponized religion. Well, now they have figured out with the Judge Roy Moore election that they can weaponize sex. It's really just that simple. I mean, there is nothing they don't weaponize to gain, maintain control and power. They weaponize the FBI. They weaponize the CIA. They weaponize the intel agencies. They weaponize the NSA spying. They weaponize the Justice Department. Kind of scary when you think about it, actually. So George Soros is funding all these groups that are essentially, I'll put them all under one category, the Me Too groups. The suddenly found, I've been thinking about this for 30 years, and this is what he did to me 30 years ago group. It's gotten to the point, and you're going to start seeing this, it's gotten to the point that he's now funding groups that are making movies about this, right? To roil up the gender divisions even more. And I told you a few weeks ago, when I was talking about the salacious sex fuzz, that you were going to see more and more and more of this. And you know what? Here it comes. Here it comes. This coming Monday at 10:30 Eastern Time, 20 women will come together to talk about Donald Trump and all the beastly sexual harassment acts and lack of acts he took toward them. Now, never mind that there are reports, and I'm going to have this for you next week. I'm tracking them down before I make it news. But there are reports that there are actually tape recordings of some of these women being bribed to the tune of $500,000, $500,000, to come up with false claims against Trump by, yes, Soros-funded organizers and groups. Once again, I hope to have those tapes for you next week. I'm checking it. But these women are all going to meet. I'm sure the press will just howl with delight and cover it far more than they're covering the corruption of the FBI and the DOJ and, you know, all the stuff that's like the essence of the American Republic. I'm sure it will have wall-to-wall coverage. And if you notice in the last week that there's a bunch of Democrats in Congress who've asked Trump to resign because he's been accused by these women of bad stuff 10, 15, 20, 25, whatever years ago. These same people, by the way, who call on Trump to resign for 10, 20, 30-year-old allegations that suddenly have come out of the woodwork, that appear, at least in some cases, to have been bought and paid for. These same people sit on these TV shows and talk about how there should be no further investigation of Hillary. I'm quoting now because I watched two of these yesterday. Two different interviews of alt-left propagandists who on one hand were calling for Trump to resign over 20 and 30 year old allegations that he denies, and on the other hand were saying that Hillary should be let off scot-free with no further investigation because A, losing the election was punishment enough, and B, it was 13 months ago. I mean, the hypocrisy is breathtaking. Breathtaking. This is CBS News is pumping up this 10:30, you know, Me Too, Trump, whatever deal coming up this Monday. Quote, women who have publicly accused President Trump of sexual harassment and assault, by the way, virtually all of these women, this happened before the election, I think we voted on this, harassment and assault will unite for the first time to speak out, the first time. You know, the fake news media, there's just no way they can tell the truth. They just can't do it. It's like, I think it's a genetic imprint. We will not tell you the truth. Will unite for the first time to speak out about their experiences on Monday, December 11th, blah, 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 so on and so forth. The press conference, by the way, is to be hosted by Brave New Films. That's the name of the outfit. Brave New Films. Now, let me tell you what a political sham this is. By the way, they're going to be calling for an investigation by Congress of sexual misconduct by the president. Never mind the fact that under the law, Congress can't investigate the president and he can't be impeached for stuff that happened before he was president. Hello? But put that to the side. I mean, that's a minor matter because they don't follow the laws anyway. Let me keep going. The women will share their firsthand accounts of President Trump groping, fondling, forcibly kissing, humiliating, and harassing women. Their disturbing allegations came to light before the post-Weinstein era of accountability for sexual misconduct and the rise of the hashtag MeToo movement. Brave New Films, folks, released the following movies. Brave New Films, let me start where Brave New Films gets their money. You know, follow the money. Brave New Films gets their money from George Soros, from his Open Societies Foundation. They released a film called 16 Women and Donald Trump. They're a nonprofit group. I think somehow, and they try to say that they're apolitical. They have no political drift whatsoever. We're just neutral. We're middle of the road. We're like, you know, in between the left-hand slice of white bread and the right-hand slice of rye bread. We're just the mayonnaise in between. Yeah, okay. By the way, they're also funded by Media Matters, another Soros-funded deal, and Democracy for America, extreme alt-left group. And but they still claim, quote, we do not expressly advocate for the election or defeat of candidates for public office, unquote. In addition, I'll let you be the judge of this. In addition to their film of 16 Women and Donald Trump, they've also done Stand Up Senate. The president-elect is a hypocrite. Seriously, now, these are films. They've also done Protect Public Education, Stop Betsy DeVos. They've also done Indivisible, A Practical Guide for Resisting the Trump Agenda. And they did another kind of short film, Getting Donald Trump Off NBC's SNL. Oh my. But you know, no problem. They're middle of the road, folks. You can trust everything they're saying, you can trust all their sources, and you can trust their paid off witnesses. Now, there is a progression to this show this morning. Because what you see happening with the weaponization of sex and race and religion and age and gender began with the weaponization under Barack Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Loretta Lynch, and Eric Holder of the Department of Justice and the FBI. And the top-down pressure-forced culture of corruption, to use Michelle Malkin's terms, that has been embedded to the top echelons of those organizations and others. So, you've probably heard, this is all in the last week. I mean, this is a torrent. The progressive left, the traitorous deep state, is, I think, about to go down. I think they're going to go down hard. I've said this for a long time, but I think it's going to happen now. And I think it's going to happen with a vengeance. And it's going to happen with a huge, big thud. So Bruce Ohr, fourth in command of the Department of Justice. Not only do we find out that he met with both of the owners at different times of Fusion GPS, the outfit that did this fake, golden shower dossier on Trump, using Russian agents, paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and apparently by Comey at the FBI, and then legitimized and apparently used by Strzok and Gray prior to and after the election to illegally obtain FISA warrants, which were then improperly used to monitor American conversations, pretending that they were monitoring foreign conversations, which were then illegally unmasked by Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, and Samantha Powers at the UN. I mean, what the hell does she have to do with it? We find out that he met with Fusion GPS while they were putting together this dossier. It gets better. We find out that his wife, I mean, you really can't make this stuff up. His wife, at the same time, was working for Fusion GPS, her specialty being Russia, doing, number one, opposition research against Trump, and number two, participating in the drafting of this fake golden shower dossier. Except for what I'm going to tell you next, it doesn't get more corrupt than that. Now, Mr. Ohr has been demoted. Well, you know, Mr. Ohr needs to be more than demoted, folks. Mr. Ohr needs to be fired, indicted, tried, and jail. And we find out this week from emails and tweets that this Strzok character, the head of the FBI counterintelligence unit, and I think fourth in command, give or take, of the FBI, conspired. Listen, this is not paranoia. This is fact now. This is from his own texts and emails. He conspired with his lover, a certain Lisa Gray, also in the FBI and an attorney, both of them working on the Hillary Clinton so-called investigation, and then working for Mueller on the Trump so-called investigation. They conspired with Andrew McCabe, the second in command of the FBI. Go back to my shows. I warned you about McCabe a long, long, long time ago. Long before, even though I suspected it, we realized how crooked Comey was. Andrew McCabe, the second in command of the FBI, whose wife got $700,000 from Clinton and the Democrats to run for a local state legislative office. Think about that. $700,000. That Andrew McCabe. And that Andrew McCabe, based on Strzok's own texts and emails, was meeting with Strzok and Gray and who knows who else. And they were planning to take down Donald Trump, either as a candidate, i.e. making sure he didn't get elected, or if he did get elected, to take him down as president. Their meetings, by the way, coincided with the beginnings of the so-called Russia-Trump investigation. Now, in my previous shows, I mean, type in Rosenstein, type in Mueller, type in special counsel, type in corruption, and you can listen to my shows of the last 3, 4, 5, 6, however many weeks. I've tied all this together for you previously, except that more stuff comes out, and every time something comes out is worse than the last something that came out. In this case, while I've given you a general overview here over the last minute or two, let me make it more specific. This guy's tweets, this guy's tweets literally talked about having an insurance policy to cover the unthinkable, i.e. the election of Trump. This guy had tweets which said Hillary Clinton needs to win 100 million to zero. This guy and his girlfriend at the FBI had tweets talking about how loathsome, despicable, blankety-blankety-blank dumb, blankety-blankety-blank, you know, whatever, Trump and his team were. This guy has an email that talks about how he and his girlfriend, Gray, met in quote-unquote Andy's office, i.e. Andrew McCabe, to discuss putting in place this insurance policy just in case, and he used the analogy. It's like insurance if you die before you're 40. It's probably not going to happen. You're probably not going to need it, but you should have it. I'm paraphrasing. I think you get the idea. You get the picture. So all this stuff has come out. And by the way, only about 375 of his 10,000 text messages have so far been released. I can't wait to see what some of the others say. They are coming from, by the way, leaks from true patriots in the Department of Justice and the FBI who can no longer tolerate the fishy, nasty, smelly, treasonous, corrupt antics of their superiors. Bully for them. It's also coming from the Inspector General's office. There's now a huge Inspector General's investigation of the FBI and certain of the other intel outfits along these lines. And it's also coming out through, finally, the Russians getting off their timid butts and going after this thing whole hog in their committees. And in the course of this, we learned that the FBI has been withholding documents and information. They still continue to withhold documents and information. The Department of Justice has done the same. These tweets and emails and Strzok's treasonous bias, acts and lack of acts, along with Gray and McCabe and who knows who else, have now started to be revealed, kind of like peeling back an onion. We find out that Hillary Clinton and Uma Abedin were allowed to remove files, digital files, devices containing digital files, and paper files from the State Department merely because, and by the way, it was approved by the White House, i.e. Barack Obama, And I believe Loretta Lynch. That I have not nailed down yet, but it was definitely, it went to the White House and was approved. They were allowed to move from the State Department, including at times that they were under subpoena, stuff that they called irrelevant, unclassified, and personal. Five of the boxes that Uma Abedin removed from the State Department had to do specifically with Muslim outreach. I've done shows on Uma Abedin before. Her affiliation with the Muslim Brotherhood, her promotion of Sharia, her working at a vehemently pro-Sharia paper whose editor is no other than her mother for a decade, not a month, but for a decade prior to becoming Hillary Clinton's henchman. Of her lying, of her lying to the FBI, along with Cheryl Mills, about her knowledge of the existence of Hillary Clinton's server. And of course, to remind you, to refresh you, even though it's going to make you gag, her hubby was pervert Mr. Wiener. Mr. Wiener. What a perfect name. Oh, my. In any event, we have also learned that some of the documents now missing from the State Department, taken by Abedin and Clinton, include Clinton's schedule, Clinton's calendar of meetings, Clinton's record of phone calls. And in the course of that, we have learned, because, and in fact, I brought this up to you over a year ago, if you tie that in to the fact she had approximately 150 meetings and phone calls with various people who donated in the end, collectively, amounts from 100,000 to tens of millions, totaling $156 million to the Clinton Foundations. Let me repeat this. Her phone calls and meetings while in the State Department, within the building, on her calendar, which is public. She's public, quote-unquote, servant. On her computers, which are public property, creating documents, which are public records, dealing with matters of public interest and, unfortunately, it now appears, national security. And she has removed those records from the State Department. Now, what do you want to bet, folks, that number one, and I've said this forever, her server was set up to conceal and to make unavailable all her communications having to do with graft, corruption, extortion, racketeering, money laundering, and increase in personal wealth through donations and other antics at the Clinton Foundation and in other entities, groups, organizations controlled by her. And what do you want to bet that her phone log shows who called and when? And what do you want to bet that if you tracked the meeting she had in the State Department and her phone log to the timing and amounts and grantors, the folks who gave this $156 million to the Clinton Foundation, what do you want to bet they dovetail exactly? I.e., pay to play. The State Department was nothing more than Hillary's personal vessel to wealth. Period. America be damned, and Americans be damned. All this has come out just in the last week. Just in the last week. I mean, it's stunning. We also find out in the last week that the FBI, I mean, how do you do this? This is not legal. They forced their inspector general to sign a non-disclosure agreement about what he found in his investigations of some of these matters. And for some reason, the guy signed it, or the gal. I mean, I don't know if it's a guy or a gal. The non-disclosure specifically saying that he could not share his investigation with the Congress, who has appropriated the money for his salary, which is your tax money, that he could not share with Congress. I mean, the FBI at the top, folks, is not only rotten, corrupt, and in the case of Comey, Stroke, Gray, and others, treasonous, it's gone rogue. It's like it's its own government. Because, you know, we're not smart enough to govern ourselves. And the same has happened at the Justice Department. And where the hell is Jeff Sessions cleaning up this mess? Investigating what needs to be investigated. And the whole thing ties back into Uranium One. And I've done a show, you know, type Uranium One in the search bar. I've done an entire show on that. Let me tell you something interesting. Do you know that two bears down in Utah? You remember my story at the beginning of the show here? Two bears down in Utah, the national monument which Barack Obama created and Trump partially dismantled. Did you know that that is the second largest deposit of uranium that we have, other than the mines from which Uranium One extracts uranium? Do you think that's a coincidence? Do you think a president who at the time that the FBI is investigating, and I'm using their words, the graft, corruption, extortion, bribery, and etc., related to the Uranium One deal before Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton approved it, which knowingly sold 20% of our uranium assets to the Russians, an adversary, which made us increase our imports. That's right, we've been importing uranium before that. Now we had to import more. Do you really think that his designation of Two Bears, the second largest deposit of uranium, was an accident, folks? You think it was just a big coincidence? I'll let you think about that. I will let you think about that. Let me read you the words of Andrew C. McCarthy. He's a former assistant United States attorney for the Southern District of New York. He was writing in the National Review. Quote, "The Obama administration, with Secretary Clinton at the forefront, but hardly alone, was knowingly compromising American national security interests. The administration greenlighted the transfer of control of over one-fifth of American uranium mining capacity to Russia, a hostile regime, and specifically to Russia's state-controlled nuclear energy conglomerate Rosatom. Worse, at the time the administration approved the transfer, it knew that Rosatom's American subsidiary was engaged in a lucrative racketeering enterprise that had already committed felony extortion, fraud, and money laundering offenses." I continue. This is Andrew McCarthy, Assistant United States Attorney, former Assistant United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York. Quote, "Prosecutors," by the way, do you know who the prosecutor was, folks? Oh, yeah, Rosenstein. Huh. You know who the investigator was? Mueller, and then Comey. Amazing, isn't it? Quote, "Prosecutors waited 4 years before quietly pleading the case out for a song in violation of Justice Department charging guidelines. Meanwhile, the administration stonewalled Congress, reportedly threatening an informant who wanted to go public." That informant, by the way, will be testifying sometime in the next 2 to 4 weeks in Congress, folks. Let me continue. Quote, "The lobbyist," he's talking about this informant, "was uncomfortable, worried that the proposal would land him on the wrong side of the law. So he contacted the FBI and revealed what he knew. The Bureau and the Justice Department allowed him to participate in the Russian racketeering scheme as a confidential source, and he is thus known as CS1 in affidavits of the government years later, presented to the federal court in order to obtain search and arrest warrants. At the time the unidentified man became an informant, the FBI was led by Director Robert Mueller, and the investigation was centered in Maryland. There, the U.S. attorney was Obama appointee Rod Rosenstein, now President Trump's deputy attorney general, and the man who appointed Mueller as special counsel to investigate Trump. Huh. It's rather amazing, don't you think, folks? Don't you think? Anyway, I'm going to keep you up to speed on some of this stuff. Because it's just unbelievable. And I don't know where Jeff Sessions is on this, but, you know, for a gentleman who believes in the Constitution, I believe he does, for a gentleman who appears honorable, and I think he is, for a gentleman who, in his own words, in his congressional testimony, reveres, I quote, reveres the office of Attorney General, he really needs to start acting like Attorney General. We don't need a second special prosecutor, folks. We need three more. We need one to reopen the case on Hillary Clinton. Uranium One, which was never thoroughly investigated, the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton server, the Clinton emails, and all the Clinton cronies, including those like Aberdeen and Mills, who lied, absolutely, positively lied. In other words, they stated the sun was shining, and then there were emails discovered that they knew it was a cloudy day. That's one special counsel. The second special counsel needs to focus specifically on the corruption at the upper echelons of the FBI and wherever that takes them down the chain. At the least, it will include Gray, Strzok, Comey, and perhaps Mueller. I don't know. And the third special prosecutor needs to investigate the corruption at the DOJ, which will include at the least, Eric Holder, Loretta Lynch, that gal that refused Trump's order, her name escapes me now, Mr. Orr and his wife, and Mr. Rosenstein. And listen, we may even want to appoint a special investigator who does nothing but vet everybody that's on the Mueller investigative team, to determine whether they are simply humans with some political thought more than allowed, or whether they are vehement partisans acting in a biased manner trying to reach a predetermined outcome, such as Comey and Strzok did in exonerating Hillary Clinton and changing their memo, a copy of which was obtained by Fox News and is news, so I'm sure you've seen it, the day before yesterday on Thursday, where it's clear that the grossly negligent, which would have landed Hillary Clinton in indictment territory, was changed to extremely careless, we think by Mr. Strzok, and we find out to our surprise, well, maybe not our surprise, we find out as our edification, as our verification, that Hillary's server was not perhaps hacked, as Comey said in his July news conference, but the original draft said was likely hacked, big difference, by enemy foreign operatives. I wonder how many people died, folks, at that breach of national security, which was occasioned by Hillary Clinton having a knowingly illegal server so that she could enrich herself and hide that enrichment from the public via her use of the State Department to get contributions to the Clinton Foundation. I wonder. I hope we find out. Now, the very last thing I'm going to talk about with you this morning, I'm just going to spend a couple minutes because I'm just about over time here, is some of the things that you need to be aware of that are changing for tax situations in 2017 will not be addressed for this tax year by the new tax bill, assuming it gets passed, and you should be watching out for. Number one, your mileage rate and deduction for driving is going to fall to 53.5 cents per mile, and your rate's going to decrease to 17 cents per mile for driving for medical purposes, and that will affect about all of us, I believe. The income levels to qualify for health premium credits in 2017, this is all Obamacare crap, is going to increase to 400% of the federal poverty level, $11,880 to $47,520 for singles, and $24,300 to $97,200 for family of four. I gave you that story last week. If you didn't listen to last week's show, I gave you a pretty detailed story at the beginning of the show, an actual case study of a family who is directly impacted by this information I'm giving you right now. They make, I'm rounding numbers, $100,000 a year. They fall in that no man's land of no subsidy, no help, but they got to have the insurance. And they're literally paying 25% of their income with their deductibles and their premiums. 25% of their income. Scary, scary, scary stuff. The cap on deductible contributions to health savings accounts, for those of you that have them, is going to go to $3,400 for coverage if you're on your own. Family coverage will go to $6,750. If you were born before 1963, beginning this year, you can put in an extra $1,000 and get a deduction for it. Long-term care premiums and their deduction are going up, or should I say the limits on them. If you are 71 or older in 2017, you can write off as much as $5,110 per person for long-term elderly care, you know, nursing home stuff. If you're 51 to 60, you can deduct $1,530, and if you're 40 or younger, $410. 41 to 50 can deduct $770. In other words, if you're putting away money for your old age in a nursing home. I plan to ride my horse over a cliff, so I'm not going to worry about it. The threshold for deducting medical expenses is going to go up to 10% of your AGI. If you are 65 years or older, I want you to think about that. Now, this is Obamacare, folks. Remember the Democrats are out there talking about how this is going to hurt the young people and the old people and all this stuff. Here's what their Obamacare bill does this year. If you are 65 years or older, starting with your 2017 returns to be filed in 2018, you will not be able to deduct the first 10% of your medical expenses. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So that is my show for today. I want you to know that this country, depending upon how this corruption at the FBI, corruption at the DOJ, mandated by the corruption in the Obama White House, how we handle this could determine the future of our republic. It is that serious. If these people, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I detest Hillary, and I do, on every level, as a human being, as a politician, as an American, she's just bad. She's rotten. And she's a liar. And she's a crook. But never mind my personal feelings about Hillary. Let me tell you that if Donald Trump had done this stuff, I'd be asking for the same thing I'm asking for this morning for him. This is about America. This is about the Constitution. This is about our individual rights. This is about our individual protections. This is about the equal application of the rule of law to everyone, which is the basis of our society and which is mandated by the Constitution. This is the essence of who we are. It is the core of American values. It is that important. And whether it's Hillary Clinton or John Doe, whether it is Donald Trump or Sally Lou, whether it is Barack Obama or Abdul, I'll use a different analogy for his name. People must be accountable for their actions, their failures to act, and their breach of the laws of the country and the provisions of the Constitution, which form the spine, the basics, the foundation of our society. Because if they are not, number one, the message will be sent to future people like them that it's okay. Number two, Americans will permanently, irretrievably, and irrevocably lose faith in some of those few institutions of government they really need to believe in and trust in. And number three, because they broke the law, and in doing so, they have undermined your rights, your votes, your future, your freedoms, and the future of your family and your children, and your children's children. It is not something that you can ignore. Whoever it is, whatever they did, whatever party they are from, whatever political persuasion drives their boat or they pretend to drive their boat, these people must be held accountable. We shall see if that happens. As Ben Franklin, I'm going to leave you with these words this morning. As Ben Franklin said, as he signed the Constitution, "We have given you a republic. We shall see if you can keep it." This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a safe week, and we'll be talking to you next week, just before Christmas, our Christmas show.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.